Hello, everybody. We are beginning with Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 62, whether in one part or in more parts. I had a little mishap last time, so I recorded 61A two times, and they were quite different, but one had video and one did not, and then 61B. And we have reached now page 100. Page 140. And we were discussing at the end of 61B the idea that instead of speaking of the orthodox planets, we would speak of the exoteric planets, along with esoteric planets, and so bring our vocabulary and definitive words more into line with the inner teaching. DK is quite, I think, cautious about our use of words, as there is a lot of the fifth and third rays in this study. And so we must seek within reason as much precision as we possibly can. Now, that's not entirely possible, of course, not entirely possible, but we can do our best with it. He tells us here, continuing on page 140, and we are in the Aquarius chapter, in astrology we are dealing all the time with the energies which produce movement and subjective and outer activity. We are constantly dealing with the factor of change and the particular qualities of the change involved. We are actually in this, I'd like to call it a great science of relationships. We are defining the types of relationships which exist between all factors in creation. Well, at first, the factors which are apprehensible by such as ourselves, and there are, of course, many factors which are not, as we are really living in one of the lowest dimensions of cosmos, and even as monads, we are still on the cosmic etheric plane, which is the seventh of these particular cosmic planes, and there may be supercosmic and super-supercosmic and on, until the 10 dimensions of cosmos are fulfilled. So even as spirits, we are relatively low. Our vibrational level is relatively low in the great and only cosmic life, which I have been calling the Universal Logos. We are concerned with the impact of many forces upon the human, the planetary, and the systemic expression of life and purpose, and with the resultant effects. So we have the issue of impact and the effects of that impact. We are always being impacted. The question is, to what degree are we responsive? I think we will find during the Aquarian Age that the number of impacts to which we are responsive increases greatly, as it is an age when technology will help us receive these impacts and will help sensitize the human energy system to these impacts. So we have to learn how to handle this multiplicity of impacts without becoming disorganized, without losing our control. We always have to be the supervising master of the various conditions within our energy system. And as our manas increases, which it will he tells us, for at least another 500 years in this particular cycle, we will be able to understand and arrange the results of the impacts so as to produce a fuller life for the individual, for humanity, and for the planet. When these effects and activities are purely objective, and under that world I place all events and happenings going on in the three worlds of human experience, the physical, astral, and mental, you have personality demonstrations. So objectivity is that which occurs, in the cosmic physical body, of the solar logos. Which is a different way, certainly, for us of defining objectivity. Usually we think of it as that which is related strictly to the lowest three subplanes of the systemic or solar etheric physical plane. But objectivity is anything that is occurring in the 18 lower subplanes, and even to a certain extent from the solar logoic perspective, objectivity includes 21 subplanes. So anything within the 18 lower subplanes, and even from the solar logoic perspective, within the 21 lower subplanes. When they are consciously related to the world of causes and are the result of right and conscious direction of the emanating center, the soul, then the personality forces become subject to the diffusion of the soul energies, and the personality or form nature becomes magnetic in a different manner, and so attracts to itself energies of a higher and more dynamic plane to the ones with which the man has been concerned hitherto, and which he has learned to control and use. Now that's quite a sentence. We're talking about effects and activities, but when they are consciously related to the world of causes, and from a certain perspective the world of causes is the world of the egoic lotus, and are the results of right and conscious direction of the emanating center, the soul, then the personality forces, which in a way remain what they are, become subject to the diffusion. That's a very Aquarian word, because Aquarius is a sign which spreads things far and wide. So they become subject to the diffusion of the soul energies, that is, the personality forces become subject to the diffusion of the soul energies, and the personality or form nature becomes magnetic in a different manner, and so is not simply attracting energies from its own level, but attracts to itself energies of a higher and more dynamic plane, at least the soul plane, and once the antikarana is completed, into the personality can come those energies which are from the triadal planes. Let's just say a higher and more dynamic plane to the ones which man has hitherto concerned hitherto, and which he has learned to control and use. So we will say soul energies and triadal energies are magnetically attracted into the personality. Magnetically, okay. In other cases, the soul energies intensify certain of the personality of forces, and the effect of the exoteric planets is supplemented by an increasingly steady inflow of the energies of the esoteric planets. This is, I think, DK is giving us some very important astrological generalities here in the sign Aquarius, discussion of the sign Aquarius, which is so much connected with astrology in general, and with the science of cycles, which he will tell us. It's a sign which has much of the fifth ray and even the third ray connected to it, and maybe one other ray. I always feel that the lords of the constellations have three major rays. Maybe one of them is repeated, I don't know. But we would have to arrange these major rays according to the monad, the soul, and the personality, how they would be expressing through these. And these, let's see here. Okay. Yes, right here. Just stop this for a moment. So this supplementation of the effect of the exoteric planets by the esoteric planets is a major theme in esoteric astrology, and this is occurring within the personality itself. The personality forces are becoming supplemented because they are normally ruled by the exoteric planets, and they are augmented and requalified so that they carry something more than the usual exoteric effects. So the effect of the esoteric planets is supplemented by an increasingly steady inflow of the energies of the esoteric planets, which is another way of saying that soul energies are conjoined to personality energies. And these, the esoteric planets, and presumably soul energies, and these begin to have a dominantly esoteric effect. And let us say this is going on even within the personality. So the personality is becoming the soul-infused personality. In Capricorn, for instance, the influence of Saturn is both exoteric and esoteric. So, you know, we will have to discriminate between lower Saturnian effects, which maybe have to do with duty, responsibility, meeting obligations, working in the material world in a responsible manner, and so forth, and the higher esoteric effects, which have to do with attuning to the voice of conscience, attuning to the divine plan, carrying out one specific role and function within the divine plan, and so forth. We could make a list. In Taurus, Vulcan has both an esoteric and hierarchical effect. And you begin to wonder, at least I begin to wonder, when the planets have a hierarchical effect, whether some of that effect is not involving at least their soul ray in the case of non-sacred planets, for there are non-sacred hierarchical rulers, and even monadic effects in the case of esoteric planets. So that remains to be seen. In other words, with, let us say, Neptune, it usually will have a sixth ray effect, but if it, and that sixth ray effect can be operative in its esoteric rulership of Cancer, but what about its hierarchical rulership of Cancer as well? Is the second ray Vishnu Christ influence of Neptune beginning to come in there for the initiate who is responding to his monad, and then perhaps to the monadic ray of the planet involved, if that monadic ray is effective. In the case of the Earth, the first ray monad is considered to be occultly non-effective because it's a non-sacred planet, but in the case of a high planet, well, perhaps the monadic ray is becoming effective. excuse me. Whilst in Leo, the Sun rules all three, the exoteric, the esoteric, and hierarchical life, and we'll have to discriminate between the effects of the Sun on all of those different levels as the, as let's say, exoterically we have just the Sun, but possibly Jupiter involved, esoterically the Sun veiling Neptune, hierarchically the Sun veiling Uranus. Let's say there's a time when Neptune begins to supplement the ordinary exoteric meanings of the Sun, Jupiter. There's a time when Uranus begins to supplement the ordinary esoteric meanings of Neptune, veiled by the sun. So we are adding energies to energies, we are combining energies, and we have to have a very clear notion of what each one of the levels actually means, so that as the new energy comes in, we can detect what its supplementation of the already established energy actually means. We have to be very discriminating and at the same time be able to merge and blend these energies in our mind, or at least to recognize the merging and the blending of the energies. You know, and as I've said, you can practice in astrology by adding energies to each other, just as you would add numbers. You know, what happens when you add 3 to the 2? Well, a different quality is established. Perhaps both the 3 and the 2 are still there, but the number 5 is now there as well. So, you know, what happens when you add Venus to Mars? Well, Mars persists, Venus is supplemental, and the Venus-Mars combination is something of its own nature. In a way, I consider the Venus-Mars combination to be the potential not only for the merging of female and male, but the soul-infused personality, because Mars represents each of the vehicles within the personality and the personality itself, whereas Venus represents the solar angel. Well, the personality exists, yes. The solar angel exists, yes. And then what is the combination of the two as the soul-infused personality? So this study of the art of combination and recognizing when combinations are operative and still being able to discriminate the factors within the combination, these are methods by which the esoteric astrologer can train himself as he's trying to understand more accurately the interplay of energies. Okay, so he's given us here a double Saturn, double Vulcan, a triple Sun. This we will study somewhat later in this section, and when we come to the consideration of the constellation Leo, which indeed is rather later in the book. Planetary influences are unusually potent in Aquarius during this world cycle because it is, in a peculiar way, a culminating sign for the majority of people who proceed from Aries to Pisces upon the fixed cross. And, of course, he seems to be implying that quite a number of people are reaching their culmination. In other words, are actually having that type of achievement, which we refer to as the third and the fourth initiations. So it is a very focal sign, especially during this Aryan period. Maybe the sign Pisces, which is an even stronger sign of culmination, but not necessarily in this Aryan period, will be so during the sixth root race. Perhaps more of the initiates will culminate their experience in the sign Pisces at that time and have a closer, therefore, relationship to Shambhala. So planetary influences are unusually potent in Aquarius during this world cycle. Now, you know, the ambiguous term world cycle, you know, all the way from the duration of a planet to the many different cycles within the planet, and even a solar cycle. A great Mahamanvantara can be called, in a way, a world cycle. So this is an ambiguous term, and we have to know that to which he is actually referring, although it will always indicate, I think, a very long period of time. It indicates a round, we're into hundreds of millions of years. If it indicates the duration of a planetary logos working through his incarnation, it will indicate trillions of years, at least according to the kind of chronology that HPB has given us. So, Aquarius, a culminating sign for the majority of people who proceed from Aries to Pisces upon the fixed cross. A rare few, and here he gets into this idea which I have sometimes mentioned, a rare few culminate the experience of life, life as a human being, upon the three crosses in the sign Pisces, and so become world saviors. He has not necessarily mentioned that they will be second-rate types, but it would seem to me they would have to have some strong second ray in their nature, either as the soul ray or the monadic ray or both. Then, Pisces, although probably the strongest of the second ray signs, because it is the cosmic decanate through which the second ray works, is not necessarily the strongest of the culminating signs in our particular world cycle or in this particular race. They, the ones who thus culminate, they know then and only then the highest aspect of the first ray as it expresses itself through the activity of death. It's quite a statement there. We're dealing here with a Plutonic effect. And I would say Pluto is the hierarchical ruler of Pisces, and let us also remember that Neptune has a special relationship in Pisces. When it comes to the Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva of our solar system, each of them, I think, expresses through three of the planets particularly, and I believe that both Neptune and Pluto are involved in the expression of the Shiva aspect of our solar logos, which is the first ray aspect, and both of them have a great deal to do with death. Pluto cutting the thread which binds the lives together, and Neptune providing for that power of abstraction, which is lifting the life out of form. So we have the power of the sign Pisces in relation to death and Shambhala indicated. The bulk, however, of the world initiates climax their experience in Aquarius and become liberated world servers. Now, that definitely, this implies the fourth initiation. And what this we have learned elsewhere, that Aquarius is one of those signs very much connected with the third initiation, when the sense of universality really begins to dawn. And I would say that it has a strong connection as well to the second initiation, involving a great purification of the Augean stables, as in the myth of the labors of Hercules, the Aquarius labor. It seems that most of the difficulty of the human race at the present time is emotional. The people are largely astral in their polarization, and that the purification of the purification of the astral nature and of the desire nature is of the utmost importance. So the bulk, however, of the world initiates, because you certainly have to be initiate in order to climax your experience as a human being or come to its consummation, climax their experience in Aquarius and become liberated, there's your Uranian word, liberated world servers. Given the idea of liberation at the fourth initiation, given the strongly electrical and first-ray nature of Uranus, I think of it as an important planet in producing the fourth initiation. I think that since Uranus is exalted in the sign of death, which is Scorpio, that it has this meaning at the fourth initiation of liberating the man from the realm of death, overcoming the Hydra entirely, and a certain aspect of the Hydra of humanity as well, that the fourth degree initiate must confront. I mean, he may have taken care mostly of his own Hydra, that nine-headed beast, by the time the third initiation is passed. But there's another thing to deal with, and it is the Hydra of humanity, and so the true candidate for the fourth degree is confronting that particular Hydra. Okay, so they become liberated world servers in Aquarius. They turn their backs upon all further progress for themselves in this cycle. They turn the, well, and there the cycle, of course, is a smaller unit, I believe. They turn their backs, let's see here. They turn their backs upon all further progress for themselves in this cycle and on all satisfaction of their own spiritual aspiration, and become carriers of the water of life to humanity, joining the ranks of the hierarchy. Now, this, of course, would be, let us see for how long it would be. These people would be initiates of the fourth degree, the fifth degree would be following shortly on, and before the sixth degree could be taken and a choice concerning following a destination which leads to other objectives, maybe some thousands of years would have to pass. At some point, DK says that a very long time passes. The master is put to work in earth service for quite a while. At least that's how it is now, when the sixth degree is the choice point. And only after proving himself in earth service, or even though that is not his path, but let's just say that all masters are put to work or in that way, only after proving himself for quite a lengthy period can he actually make his choice to follow perhaps a different path. And at this time, we are told that many initiates, even of the sixth degree, are being told by Sanat Kumara or asked, requested, to delay their decision, because the situation on Earth is so critical that they, even though they could be liberated onto these other paths, leading away from the Earth, they remain with the Earth. So the question of cycle there has to be defined carefully. It's not a world cycle, not that long. These liberated world servers turn their backs upon all further progress for themselves, because they still do exist as energy systems within the One in this cycle, and on all satisfaction of their spiritual aspiration, for certainly masters and Chohans have great aspiration. It's not something that ends, and there are higher spiritual satisfactions towards which they aspire, and become carriers of the water of life to humanity, all the different types of energies which humanity may need, joining thus the ranks of the hierarchy as fourth degree initiates or as fifth degree initiates. Those who achieve in Pisces, well, it sounds high enough in Aquarius, doesn't it? It sounds like we have an amazingly high requirement here, a sacrificial requirement, even in Aquarius for the liberated world servers. Now, how much higher can Pisces be? Those who achieve in Pisces and make the higher and further grade in their development pass into that center to which we have given the name Shambhala. They pass into that center to which we have given the name Shambhala. I think this is irrespective of their ray. We are told that sometimes certain fifth-degree initiates of the first ray, upon the first ray, are allowed into that point of attention we call Shambhala. But generally, it requires the sixth degree to pass into Shambhala. So there's a little ambiguity here. Can one achieve the fourth initiation in Pisces and pass directly into Shambhala, or must one wait until generally the sixth degree to pass into Shambhala, or if you're a first-rate type taking your fourth initiation in Pisces, can you pass directly into Shambhala? These things will have to be clarified in time. But there is a higher and further grade than those who are liberated as servers in Aquarius. And he goes on to say, but the bulk of the initiates and disciples, let's see, remain attached to the second center, that of the hierarchy of service, which is not Shambhala, the center of will. Well, these are all very high destinations. And which it will be for us, we are still a long way away from that possibility, will unfold as we pass the third degree and come closer to the possibility of making the great renunciation in the fourth degree. I don't know that any of us can definitely predict whether we will end our incarnational career in the sign Aquarius or whether it will be Pisces. I do think, though, you know, when I look at the life of Sir Francis Bacon, who was such an Aquarian individual, that may have been his Arhat initiation, or perhaps he was already an Arhat. Perhaps he was becoming a master. This is difficult to say, but certainly he was minimally an Arhat, because not long after that he appears as a master of the wisdom, as the Comte de Saint-Germain, and now in the when the 20th century came about, and probably around 2025, he became the Maha Chohan, so there's extremely rapid progress for him. So he seems to have culminated his earthly experience in scientific Aquarius. When we look at the master, which is sometimes known now as Sir Thomas, and we look at goodness, what was his name? He's the English master, one of the English masters. And he had the man for all seasons. And, you know, I'm forgetting his name. Anyway, he was his name was Thomas. And, well, let me just pause for a minute. This is crazy. I will come up with that in just... Okay, there it is. Sir Thomas More. Another great Aquarian, and clearly, in my estimation anyway, passing through the fourth initiation when he was the main counselor to Henry VIII and sacrificed his life because of his disapproval of the way that Henry VIII was conducting his personal life, which had a strong bearing upon the political and religious situation in England. So that's another one of those fourth degree lives, I think. And when I think about Plato, I sometimes wonder whether his incarnation as Plato was not an Aquarian incarnation and did not involve the fourth degree. Certainly at this point he's considered to be, Plato is considered to be a fifth rounder, which means that he is a master of the wisdom at this time. So what have we learned here? The bulk of the initiates remain attached to hierarchy. They culminate their incarnational experience in the sign Aquarius. They become liberated world servers, but they are not directly in affiliation with Shambhala, as are those who culminate their incarnational experience in Pisces. I suppose a special quality of will, of self-effacement, of the embrace of the meaning of death in the higher sense is necessary. All those are necessary for those who culminate their incarnational experience in Pisces. Aquarius, says the Tibetan, is preeminently a sign of constant movement. So if it's constant movement, think of that. It is associated with the third ray, the ray of constant movement. Associated, so, yes, yes, okay, associated with Aquarius. And of changing activity. I think the glyph of Aquarius, which has this, you know, wavy motion, suggests that constant movement and changing activity and recurrent mutations. So these are ever new combinations. That certainly is the third ray. Ever new combinations. And we recall within one of the more recent of our webinars here that Aquarius, the sign, is apparently associated with the third ray, not only the rulers that operate through it, all of them having some association either with the third aspect or the third ray. Venus oftentimes represents the intelligence aspect when compared with Jupiter second and Saturn first. Saturn brings in the third ray, and Uranus is also a planet connected with the third ray on one of its levels. So Aquarius is preeminently a sign of constant movement, of changing activity, and recurrent mutations. One of those kaleidoscopic signs, ever combining and recombining. And the symbol of the sign is expressive of this state of activity. Well, I think that we can see involving also the idea of cycles. The symbol involves the idea of the cyclic unit with its peak and trough. It is therefore a sign in which the significance of cycles is mastered. Well, if you're going to be a good astrologer, it helps to strive towards the mastery of the significance of cycles. This is considered one of the astrologer's signs, and when some powerful aspect of the chart is found in Aquarius, it's probably a good indication, if the person is of sufficient development, that they can become interested in astrology and reasonably good at astrology. It is therefore a sign in which the significance of cycles is mastered and understood by the initiate, and only the initiate can really understand and master the significance of cycles. If we think about the highest of the psychic powers or siddhis, which are available to man, it's described as all knowledge. And it's on the atmic plane, which is the third, and it's on the third subplane of the atmic plane. So we really have the question of the third ray operative here. All knowledge, third plane, third subplane. Uranus is involved, Saturn is involved, and the idea of the third type of motion, which is cyclic motion. Not spiral cyclic, but simply cyclic motion. Well, all cyclic motion is only such within a limited context. If we take a larger context and we note the progression of all systems, cyclic motion inevitably becomes spiral cyclic motion. And even though we think we are returning to exactly the same point in a cycle, the whole system has moved on and created a spiral. So no apparent recurrence of the same position in a cycle is exactly that same recurrence. Okay, it is therefore a sign in which the significance of cycles is mastered and understood by the initiate. So you can see how important this will be in the New Age, and how esoteric astrology will develop in the New Age, and how we will be able to undertake a more scientific type of living, because we will know what time it is in our lives, we will know the cycles through which we are passing, we will know the types of energies we can access in these cycles, and how to apply these energies to fulfill our plan, our program, and even the purpose of our particular incarnation. So it's a much more scientific way of living, taking advantage of the different types of energies which are available to us, being cognizant of them. And because of the huge expansion of Manus that we can expect, we will be aware of many more energies that are making impacts upon our system than we presently are. So we will have to have incredible, well, let's call it computing power, however that is arranged, whether within our own brain or through some super electronics, incredible computing power to somehow become aware of and manipulate and vector out all of the many energies which are available to us without becoming, you know, confused and overwhelmed by all these energies. And certainly as we look at all the astrological relationships that are possible, it's very possible to become confused and overwhelmed and then have to choose which are the most significant of all of these various energies. This is the tough thing, to hierarchicalize the many impacts, to hierarchicalize the many impacts which are operative in our life. This is the difficult thing. The results of the valley experience, to use the well-known language of the mystics of all ages, and of the mountaintop with its vision and light, are vividly depicted by this sign. So, you know, I sometimes think this is the sign of manic depression, you know, if we're looking at pathology. And, of course, you know, you don't have to be an Aquarian to be a manic depressive. you can be a Gemini. Well, you know, any sign is possible, this the incredible highs and lows. So with Aquarius, the fluctuations of the form have a very big effect. There are times when the form is well tuned up and responsive to the higher energies, and there are times when it falls back and is dull and non-responsive, and the feeling of being low comes upon us. So this is common to the Aquarian individual, and certainly to the highly aspiring mystic who wants union with God, but whose form is not able to sustain the high impacts, and then therefore he falls back because the form itself falls back and will not allow the consciousness to touch those very high levels. So, the results of the valley experience, to use the well-known language of the mystics of all ages, and of the mountaintop with its vision and light, are very vividly depicted by this sign, by the glyph of this sign with its inbuilt highs and lows. The Aquarian can experience the depths of depression and of self-depreciation, or he can know and pass through the exaltation of the soul and the sense of spiritual power which soul control gives, and then know them to be the interplay and the action and reaction which are necessary for growth and comprehension. So the Aquarian is always going to gain in consciousness. This leads to a gain in consciousness. So the highs and lows, I cannot say whether this is purely the result of being an individual who has the sun in Aquarius, or whether the moon in Aquarius would contribute to this, or the Aquarius ascendant. All of this has to be worked out, live studied, polls taken, the psychological life of notable Aquarians clearly analyzed, both for the sun, moon, and ascendant, or any other stellium. The Aquarian can experience the depths of depression and self-depreciation because, after all, a very big vision is seen, you know. And when you see how you measure up to the fulfillment of that great vision, it can be depressing. So a very large, vast even, vision is seen, and great possibilities, because it is a sign of the future. And all that the future may hold, or at least much that it may hold, is revealed, and then the tininess of the human being in comparison, the tiny abilities to bring that about. Unless, of course, a great trust is developed and one is able to live through those moments when one's equipment seems pitifully useless in comparison. But one has to have the confidence that these things are in the mind of God, in the universal mind, which Aquarius also rules, and that these things will be, and that one will play one's part gradually over time, regardless of one's present failing. So you have to learn to live through the illusion of your failings, that illusion which seems to make the failings greater than they are, and more lasting than they are, because they are not lasting. So if we have identification with a deep inner being, which is not the fluctuations of the form, then we can live through those moments where otherwise we would be inclined towards depression because we are too identified with the condition of the form. Or he can know and pass through the exaltation of the soul and the sense of spiritual power which the soul, which soul control gives. And you know, there's a great abstraction in Aquarius that is possible. It's one of those signs of not only abstraction, but of course deep involvement in directing matter in the right manner. But it does give elevation. You know, if it rules aviation, it after all gives elevation. When you are in an airplane and you're looking down from 35,000 feet, you get a huge perspective. I'm thinking about Immanuel Kant, who, of all things, was a Taurus, but he had Aquarius on the ascendant. He had an incredible mental abstraction. He was able to stand back from the mind and see its workings in a way that perhaps few, or if any, have been able to achieve. So the idea of a very great removal from the phantasmagoria is found in Aquarius, but also submersion in it and involvement in it, and both are operative. The idea of being in this world and yet not of it is an Aquarian possibility, a Geminian possibility as well. Let me put that down. Being in this world and yet not of it signifies the possibility of abstraction as the Aquarian can know it. And then know these things to be the interplay and the action and reaction which are necessary for growth and comprehension. I think if we were, you know, Aquarian people love to be stimulated. They love that feeling of being alive. It's associated with the etheric body, the vital body, with the sense of life and of being alive. But we know that the form just can't take it. If the form were subjected to constant stimulation, it would absolutely burn out. And of course, you do see this among Aquarian people as well, this state of overstimulation leading to burnout. So the fluctuations of the cycles, the highs and the lows, are needed for true growth. It's a bit like the alternation of the sun, influence of the sun and influence of the moon. If the sun is constantly baking you, the form will dry up and be of no use. So there have to be cycles of influence of these alternating qualities of sun and moon, of the high and the low, of the spirit and the form, in order for true growth and comprehension to take place. The law of such action and reaction is the law with which he works. Now, the law of action and reaction, it can be understood very much in a Libran sense, maybe a Geminian sense, maybe the air signs are involved here, but also the fifth ray studies the law of action and reaction. So it seems to me that it's possible for the Aquarian to understand very much the laws by which spirit can affect form. Form will approach, form will recoil, and the Aquarian can know the cycles in which this is to occur and how to take best advantage of these cycles. This is his ability to master, understand and master the science of cycles. Okay. In Leo, a man's center and point of consciousness is himself. Let's just say his own evident energy system. He turns upon himself and revolves entirely upon his own axis, and in this respect and relation, and in respect and relation to himself, and is all the time the self-centered individual. I guess, you know, DK is somewhat describing the early Leo experience, although even later the Leo individual expands the sense of self and says, well, all that I see here is really myself, even though the ring past not has gone far beyond the usual energy system, the usual constitution of man. So he's always the self-centered individual, consecrating all thought, time, and service to his own well-being and personal interests. I guess, you know, DK is speaking quite a bit here of the Ahamkarik Leo individual. The Ahamkarik. Oh, that's not it. Aham. karik, the ahamkarik, Leo, individual. There are other and higher types of Leo for whom this particular description would not apply. But as I say, the sense that the one life is the self is a very strong Leo realization. So the idea of self, lesser or greater, is never far from the Leo individual. The idea of self, lesser or greater, is never far from the Leo realization. But in Aquarius, the polar opposite of Leo and its sign of consummation, perhaps we can find that the first six signs are consummated in the last six signs according to opposition. This, I think, with respect to the evolution of the lords of the constellations, does it necessarily mean that the lords of the last six constellations are somehow more developed than the lords of the first six constellations? I wouldn't go so far as to say that, but at least he's talking about Aquarius, one of the later constellations, as being the consummatory sign of Leo, the fifth consummating in the 11th. But in Aquarius, the polar opposite of Leo and its sign of consummation, he becomes outgoing. Well, we talked about that outgoing away from his center, we might say, away from his own center. But, of course, there is superficiality possible as well. You know, you can have many incarnations in Leo or in Aquarius, or under Leo or under Aquarius. When you say under, you mean the rising sign. And they can leapfrog each other, or they can alternate, deepening the self, moving towards the group, still more deepening of the self, and so forth. So he becomes outgoing. There is no center or circle of circumscribed influence, but only two outgoing lines of energy. You know, Aquarius is a greatly distributive sign. These two outgoing lines of energy pouring from him into the world of men, whether the influence is positive or negative, whether we're dealing with some sort of contagion or epidemic on the negative side, or some great beneficence on the positive side. It's a very influential sign. So the sense of the center is lost in the usual Leonian sense, but on the other hand, in a way, the center is found everywhere. So one knows that he is far more than that which he appears to be if he confines his consciousness to his present energy system and customary ring pass not. Eventually these two signs do actually merge and become one thing. And then the whole question, you know, Leo later relinquishes the center, relinquishes the point, which is an ability that Aquarius always has. And Aquarius discovers himself to be the group and the larger universal being, which is a tendency of Leo. So Leo and Aquarius are really, in a way, one sign in consummation, but we'll have to wait a long time, and maybe our solar system will not exist at the time when these great zodiacal lords and their constellations begin to blend and merge in an altogether larger synthesis than the synthesis which will be achieved in relation to our solar system and its planets. Okay, there is no center or circle of circumscribed influence, but only outgoing lines of energy pouring from him into the world of men. You know, he told us that Leo can be a sign of great selfishness, one of the more material signs, maybe a sign in which the Black Lodge has had a field day because of the potential of selfishness and ahamkara and circumscription. So, or non-relation, or splendid isolation. You can think of the French kings in that way, you know, when a person is very, very self-approving, self-approbation, thinking of himself as quite wonderful, there is that splendid isolation and remove from true caring relationship with others. Well, you know, there are many abuses of any sign of the zodiac. It all depends on the condition of the form and the consciousness which is subject to that sign. So, you know, we just can't say when we're speaking of any sign, oh, you're like this and you're like this, or any combination. You cannot say. You have to study first the condition of the consciousness, the degree of evolution of the individual, the refinement of the vehicles. So we need a great intuitive ability. If we don't have the person sitting in front of us and we cannot relate in that way, we have to be able to tune in some other way, intuitively and sensitively, to understand the level at which this is possible. The self-conscious individual in Leo becomes the conscious server in Aquarius. And this is well expressed for us in the symbols of these two signs. Well, the tail of the lion, what is the tail of the lion? Well, it certainly does have that central point, and then, you know, the kind of extension. A point of centralization seems to be indicated in Leo, although when we're dealing with the tail of the lion, we wonder whether we're not dealing with that which does have to be relinquished, because the tail represents the past, and all must relinquish their past, and in this case, it's an egocentric past which must be relinquished, otherwise it will tie around you and confine you and circumscribe you. Okay, so the self-conscious individual in Leo becomes the conscious server in Aquarius, and this is well expressed for us in the symbols of these two signs, because the two wavy lines of energy have to do with the outpouring of all that is of value upon the just and the unjust, pouring forth for any who can use these beneficent energies. So many will not take them up, will not do anything with them, may not even register them, but there's a great Jupiterian generosity in Aquarius which pours forth these electrical Uranian lines of energy for any who may be able to benefit from it. So, as I say, a sign of wide distribution and broadcast. I know of some broadcasters who have a powerful Aquarius. They say horrible things, you know. They're very selfish and self-centered, but they do get their word out there. So always we have to know the level at which they really are functioning. The Aquarian is consecrated to group service and to the welfare of humanity. Well, that's the advanced Aquarian. You know, when we look at this, let's say we went to Esoteric Astrology here, page 333, and we would see some pretty good things about Aquarius. We would see here that the Aquarian, who is advanced, is dedicated to the soul, and he carries the burden of humanity. And if he is the initiated Aquarian, then he is the server of all men. And with Atlas, he is carrying the burden of the world. In other words, he's cooperating. Let's say that Atlas is the planetary logos of the planet, and he is cooperating with the planetary logos who upholds all of these variety of lives at the many different levels at which they are found, carrying the burden of the world. So here on page 333 is one of those excellent tabulations which deals with the three levels at which the signs will operate: the undeveloped man, the advanced man, and the disciple initiate. Of course, they do shade into each other, but there are some pretty nice ideas here connected with Aquarius: dedication to the soul, the burden of humanity, and then the server of all men, the burden of the world, for the hierarchically related, for the hierarchical worker. And similarly, all things to all men, that's that superficial extroversion, the attempt to identify with everybody and please everybody and be everything. It's an inverted sense of universality, but one is carrying the burden of one's own self, and really one is showering that little self with all that one finds in the environment. So that is, there's the Aquarian who is still very much in the ahamkaric phase, even though his self-awareness may be quite superficial. Okay, where are we here? The average Aquarian upon the mutable cross will be, for instance, a faithful employee, the adherent and worker in some firm or business. In other words, there's the group consciousness on a lower level. Group consciousness on a lower level. Some worker in some firm or business within whose limits all his interests are confined and to whose welfare all he has is consecrated. So, you know, we have to know how these signs function on the different crosses. There's, you know, that's not exactly a revolutionary Aquarian, is it? There's a lot more Saturn in it. There's some circumscription. You know, there's some confinement there. But still, there is the principle of group consciousness that is there. And when you think about that in relation to Aquarius, you do wonder whether the second ray does not have something to do with this particular sign. Remember that these signs are the concentrated influences which reflect the energy of great constellational lords. And these lords have rays just like every other being in cosmos, and they have three major rays for their periodical vehicles, personality, soul, and spirit. So, you know, you go searching for what other rays may be involved in the expression of these constellational lords through their periodical vehicles. And, you know, sometimes when you look at the group tendencies of Aquarius, you wonder, and the sense of universality, you wonder about the second ray. The third ray is there. The fifth ray is definitely given. Third ray, fifth ray, second ray, possibly. But, you know, just as the Earth, the logos of the Earth, a tiny logos by comparison, has all the rays and has seven spirits before the throne in Shambhala, and just as the Solar Logos has seven major spirits before the throne, any one of these constellational lords will have before its major interior center seven major spirits and will distribute all of the rays, but some of them will be emphasized more than others. Upon the fixed cross, this consecration to others, you know, in the business or the firm, expands beyond that and becomes world service. Well, look at the problem today, you know. Here, you know, shall we serve the corporation or the or humanity? The corporation, let's just say, or the nation, or the many nations, or humanity. You see, these are Aquarian questions, and a lot of people may have their interest confined simply within a corporation and try to do all that is well for that corporation without understanding that it's part of a larger whole, a larger whole, a larger whole. So gradually the Aquarian expands his sense of what is the larger whole. No, I'm over time. Well, 1 hour and 3 minutes. Goodness. So I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to pause here. Let's consider this 62A. I'm not sure whether I can make a 62B or whether I'll have to go on to 63, and I'll know very shortly. So this is page 140. It's Esoteric Astrology Adventure 62 or 62A, and we've gone from page 140 to 142, about two pages for each of these, and I will be back shortly, either with the Great Invocation or with a continuation of what we are presently doing. So, okay, we are going to continue now, and I think we will go forward with the Great Invocation at this point because there are some technical difficulties. And I'll begin with Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 63. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men, let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men, may Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Thank you, everybody, and we will continue with page 142, Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 63, coming up. Until then, thank you for participating, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.